Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
The Apostle Islands are among Wisconsin's most visited destinations, but not if you can't get there.
There needs to be an awareness that people with limited mobility still should have access.
We'll look at efforts to make a Wisconsin national treasure accessible to everyone. Plus, he's a son of the Iron Range who's made it to the network talent shows, but he's not afraid to show a sensitive side.
Fall was always your favorite season.
We'll catch up with Preston Gunderson.
Leaves are falling from the trees.
Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Never cared much for football, will you watch it with me?
Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
He's a son of the Iron Range who's made it to the network talent shows, but he's not afraid to show a sensitive side.
Fall was always your favorite season.
We'll catch up with Preston Gunderson.
Leaves are falling from the tree.
But first, the Apostle Islands are among Wisconsin's most visited destinations, but not if you can't get there.
There needs to be an awareness that people with limited mobility still should have access.
We'll look at efforts to make a Wisconsin national treasure accessible to everyone. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. That's the sound of the waves on Lake Superior as you head out to the Apostle Islands. The islands are a national treasure, and the area has been designated a national lakeshore for everyone to experience. But not everyone can. To get to the beach leading to the famous sea caves, you have to walk from the parking lot down 45 steps, with no ramp for those with disabilities. On the water, many people with mobility issues are able to paddle kayaks and explore the islands in other ways, but first they have to get there. Here to discuss that access and how it may be improving are Apostle Island Explorer, if we can call her that, Janet Bedura of Wauwatosa, who uses a powered wheelchair to get around, and Jeff Rinicky, the Executive Director of the Friends of the Apostle Islands. Welcome to Simply Superior, Janet and Jeff.
Thank you very much, Robin.
So, Janet, I think I understand you've been exploring the islands for a while. What challenges have you faced in doing so, and when did you first bring them to the attention of those who might be able to address them?
I've been up there several times. The only two times was through an organization called Wilderness Inquiry out of Minnesota, and they do canoeing, camping, rafting experiences for people of all abilities. So if you have a disability, they will accommodate you as best they can. So in terms of the Apostle Island National Lakeshore, it was through that organization that I was able to go up there and have two camping experiences, one of which, weather permitting, we were able to kayak and explore the caves.
Mm-hmm. Now, weather permitting is a qualifier to everything we do up here.
So. Right, exactly.
And Jeff, when did your group first become aware of mobility challenges?
I've been fortunate to live in Bayfield for over 30 years, and one of the beauties of it is the rugged landscape, the cliffs and the stretches of blue water. But those, of course, can be very difficult for accessibility issues. So the National Park Service, their interest in accessibility issues even predates the Friends. They were working on things as far back as 2008, building privies, accessible privies on islands like Basslet. Friends of the Apostle Islands received a very generous grant in 2017 to begin what we then called our Wilderness Accessibility Fund. Now we call it Access for All, and it has become one of the main pillars of our organization.
Mm-hmm. You said in 2008, but the American with Disabilities Act, of course, passed in 1990. So 2008 may be a little bit late getting to the game?
Well, what we do with the National Park Service is we help them support projects that they might otherwise have difficulty finding funds for. So the role of Friends is to try to push them in the right direction with the help of private philanthropic donors.
And by the way, they're not the only entity that's a little bit behind. We're speaking with Apostle, I'm going to call you Apostle Islands Explorer. Can I call you that, Janet?
Right, exactly.
All right, Janet Bandura, and also Jeff Renicky of the Friends of the Apostle Islands. We're talking about making the islands and the National Lakeshore more accessible to those with disabilities. So what improvements are being planned?
There's a lot that needs to be done in the islands. In 2012, the National Park Service, of their own accord, I might add, undertook a accessibility kind of a survey of where they were. And that showed both the opportunities they had and the challenges that they had. So they have done things like building more than 13 accessible privies on an array of islands. There's a project right now to connect East Bay on Sand Island, which is where the dock is, 2 miles to the lighthouse, which is one of the main attractions, with a wheelchair accessible boardwalk. But it's often more than just the physical. The park has also done things like adding audio and tactile interpretive signs, which allow people with vision and hearing challenges to get the information they need. And we at Friends of the Apostle Islands just finished a brand new website, friendsoftheapostleislands.org, which incorporates some state-of-the-art accessibility features, and we are very proud of its AA rating for accessibility. So there's a whole gamut of things to do, and the park has shown a long history of being interested in doing them, and Friends is trying to help them along.
You know, you must have anticipated my next question. I was going to talk about people with who are hard of hearing or who have vision challenges, and you just did. And before anybody mentions that, I'd like to point out that indeed these include many people who are very active in the outdoors. I did actually a story about a blind hiker did the Appalachian Trail, and there's blind skiers I've known for years. You know, people who thrive in the outdoors. So, Janet, what other misperceptions would you like to correct in that regard?
I think, you know, one of the main ones would be just access. You know, sometimes I know there's a cost involved in making things accessible to people that have mobility impairments. And I think, you know, while that's true, I think that there needs to be an awareness that people with limited mobility still should have access to as much as other people do in terms of our national parks. Mm-hmm. And while I know that not everything could be made accessible or should be made accessible, I think people with mobility impairments should still be able to, you know, enjoy what the national parks have to offer and also get a flavor of that park. And so even if it's, you know, pockets of areas that are accessible where you can, you know, enjoy the beauty of the park and all it has to offer, I think there should be a focus on that.
Our friends at the Duluth News Tribune spoke with both of you actually last weekend, and in a similar story. I thought I saw pictures, but it wasn't of you. But how far have you gone out paddling in the area?
On the one time that I was able to kayak there, it was strictly along the terms for it, but along the shoreline in the caves.
Well, the caves are the big thing.
Yes. I mean, that right. was the purpose you, of the trip. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was lovely. You know, I think this organization that I mentioned before, Wilderness Inquiry, does offer other trips that go to the islands. I just didn't choose that one.
Mm-hmm. And you, too, anticipated my next question, actually. I was mm-hmm. going to say what accommodations can't be done. But, you know, even in asking that, there's accommodations, if you will, that can't be done for people who don't have any disabilities, right? I mean, it's a pretty wild area.
Yeah, let me speak to that, if you could, Robin. The Apostle Islands National Lakeshore is made up of 21 islands and a 12-mile stretch of coastline. It's also interesting to note that 80% of that land area is designated wilderness under the National Wilderness Preservation Act and the Wilderness Act of 1964. The Wilderness Act precludes the building of things like boardwalks and a lot of interpretive signs. So one of the reasons the National Park Service is focusing on Myers Beach, which is not in the wilderness system, Little Sand Bay and Sand Island, is because those are areas that are outside of the wilderness, but they're also the areas that are most popular with our visitors. There are about 80% of the visitation in the park takes place along the mainland, Little Sand Bay and Myers Beach, Sand Island and Stockton Island. So the idea of developing a ramp out at Myers Beach for the sea caves and doing more accessible projects at Little Sand Bay and Sand Island is also a way to have a really high impact on the sheer number of users that use those facilities. There's very little we can do to make some of the highest parts of the lighthouses accessible or some of the outer islands accessible, but we're focusing on the places that people do use and that we have the ability to work with accessible features.
And part of the wilderness, yes, is to keep it wilderness and to keep people out of there, whether they're walking or using wheelchairs or doing somersaults, right? Stay out of there. It's a wilderness,
yeah.
Right? We are speaking with disability activist Janet Bedura, and I'm again calling her Apostle Islands Explorer. You've done more exploring than me. I have not yet been to the sea caves. I hate to admit that after all. I know. Yes, you're going to drag me out there. And Jeff Rinicky of the Friends of the Apostle Islands, and if I'm going to be his friend, I guess I have to do that. We're talking about making the islands and the National Lakeshore more accessible to those with disabilities. So review with me again what has been done and what yet to come.
We put together a timeline of the things that the National Park Service has already accomplished without the help of friends, and they've been very active. They've even won, let's see, it was back in 2016, they won the National Accessibility Excellence Award. So the staff of the park has been very cognizant of the need to do these things as far back as 2008. In 2010, for instance, they added audio devices to the National Park Visitor Center, which helps people who have issues with hearing or sight. Just last year, we cut the ribbon, Friends of the Apostle Islands cut the ribbon on an all-accessible amphitheater at Stockton Island so that people can now get off of the boat on the dock and have complete ease of access all the way up to the amphitheater, which features the ranger talk. Sand Island has accessible privies, accessible picnic grounds, camping sites, and the boardwalk, not only to the lighthouse on the far end of the island, but this summer an extension was put on, or begun at least, to the historic Hansen Farm on Sand Island. So there's projects all over the park that are taking place to help make this seemingly inaccessible place more accessible.
And what's yet to come?
Well, the big project we're working on is the ramp at Myers Beach. As you mentioned, that is a very popular site. So on some summer weekends, you'll get as many as 500 paddlers down there, and also beach walkers. Mm-hmm. And for those of your listeners who remember the ice caves in 2014.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
The steps that you had to get down. 45 steps leading down a 23-foot sand bank. We are proposing to put in a 500-foot, 3% grade ramp that would allow wheelchair access down to the beach without those steps. The steps would still be there, so for those of you who wanted the challenge, they could take it that way, but the ramp is the big focus point of the Access for All campaign right now, but not the only one.
Mm-hmm. Janet Bedura, these initiatives started with the Park Service in 2008. As I mentioned, the ADA was passed in 1990. Was it a bit overdue, or does that matter?
Well, you know, accessibility concerns are, I think, prevalent in all walks of life for a person with a mobility impairment, which is what I can speak to. Yeah, I think it's overdue. There are many, many places that I don't have access to that I would like to have access to. So I would say, yeah, it's overdue.
Well, on a positive note, I'm wondering if there are any that are models. Okay, I haven't been to the sea caves, but I have to say I haven't been to Yellowstone either. So, you know, but seriously, are there national parks that have, to your knowledge, paved the way, so to speak?
I mean, you mentioned Yellowstone, and I have been there, and I think they have done a very nice job of making, I think, a lot of the park accessible and a lot of the different areas of the park. So as I mentioned before, you get a feeling or a flavor of the different areas within the park, and I think they've done a good job of doing that.
It begins with awareness. This is a long process. Accessibility is often very expensive, and especially when you're talking about national parks. I mean, in many cases, national parks are examples of some of the wildest, roughest, most far out there landscapes that this nation has to offer. And so it is no simple thing to make these areas accessible. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that one in four U.S. adults, more than 61 million Americans, have a challenge that significantly impacts their activity in their lives. So think about what that means for the Apostle Islands. We get over 200,000 visitors a year. That means as many as 40,000 people a year could find our park difficult or impossible to fully enjoy. So it begins with awareness, and it is a long journey. And it is wonderful to see not only the National Park Service, but the friends groups like I represent and the public in general, realizing that it's time to do what we can for accessibility in our national park.
Mm-hmm. And that leads to a question, what can people do if they want to help, if they want to push this effort along?
Friends of the Apostle Islands is spearheading what's called the Access for All campaign. That campaign is centered upon the ramp at Myers Beach. The effort is to raise $325,000 of private philanthropic funding, which then will be leveraged by the National Park Service and matched with a $325,000 Centennial Fund grant to help pay for that. So the great thing is that every dollar you give to Access for All actually will get doubled as the National Park contributes to that as well. And if people want to give, they can visit our accessible website at friendsoftheapostleislands.org.
Janet, any final thoughts?
It's just I'm very appreciative that I had the opportunity through Wilderness Inquiry and all the work that has been done to make it accessible. It was a number of years ago that I was up there, and it sounds like a whole lot more has been done since I was up there. And, you know, as you said, the awareness, I'm very appreciative, and I'm sure many people are, that there is more and more, you know, an awareness that things need to be made accessible for all people as best they can be.
All right. We've been speaking with the Paso Islands Explorer, I'm definitely calling you that, and Outdoors Disability Activist, and Yellowstone Explorer, too. Way more than me. Janet Badura of Wauwatosa and Jeff Renicky of the Friends of the Paso Islands. We've been talking about making the islands and the National Lakeshore more accessible to those with disabilities. Thank you both for joining us, Janet and Jeff.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, he's an Iron Range native who's made it to the network talent shows, but he's not afraid to show his sensitive side. We'll catch up with Preston Gunderson.
Tired eyes searching for the right. Seen too much trouble in my life. Everywhere I seem to look. Feels like an unwritten story to a captivating book.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. I'm not one to promote stereotypes. In fact, my goal in the media world is to try to break them. So, is it okay for us to feature a man showing his sensitive side?
Our love.
That may be what singer-songwriter Preston Gunderson is proving on this next album. Titled Fall, appropriately enough, it drops on October 22nd and chronicles the end of a long-term relationship, from heartbreak to disenchantment, to hopefulness and reflection. Preston's journey also leads from his birthplace on the Iron Range of Minnesota in Virginia to a national spotlight, making it as a casting finalist on The Voice in 2013 and American Idol 2 years later. Closer to home, he was a singer-songwriter grand champion in a much more important contest to us, Duluth's Dylan Days Songwriting Competition in 2014. He now lives in the Twin Cities, where he's premiering that new album in a performance at the Southern Theater in Minneapolis on October 22nd. And he joins us now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Preston Gunderson.
Thank you for having me, Robin. It's a pleasure to be here.
So right off the bat, all of us up here get Fargo jokes, okay? Just the other day, somebody heard about my show and they parodied me doing a fishing report with a, yeah, you betcha, okay? Which I don't do, and I didn't even do it very well just now. But do you ever get people asking if you're related to the cop Marge Gunderson from the movie?
You know, it's actually really funny you mentioned that. I have had a couple people ask me, and then they always want me to do that good old Fargo accent. So that long O, and I talk about going out on a boat, you know, and going for a
hey,
little
Hey, Marge,
rip.
I think they're going to take my duck stamp, huh?
Yeah.
What do you think, Marge?
Exactly, yeah. I've had a few people bring it up, but that's probably the most recognizable Gunderson that I can think of from that Fargo show there. So
tell us about your real Hollywood career. How'd you get into talent shows?
Yeah, so I was in college. I went to school in Duluth, the College of St. Scholastica. And shortly after I graduated, I was with some of my buddies there. And they were like, hey, there's this new show that's pretty cool. You should try it out. It's called The Voice. And initially, I was kind of like, I don't think that sounds like something that's up my alley. I think that's, you know, it's a long shot. I don't want to waste my time. And then, of course, you know, when you're hanging out with your buddies and you just graduated from college, generally you're having a few adult beverages. And they got me to change my mind. And so I signed up. And the next day I heard from them and they said, Preston, what airport do you want to get picked up at? And at the time, I was living back in Virginia because I had just graduated and I went back before I was figuring out what I was doing next. And so I said, how about Hibbing Airport? And they were like, what? Okay, Minneapolis. Okay, great. So.
Oh, you should have had them do the Hibbing. You know, there was a great commercial, a local commercial for Hibbing Airport. And yeah, I would love one of these days to try to book a ticket from Hibbing to Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and see how that works.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, they had no idea. They were like, Hibbing, Minnesota. No, no, we're going to pick you up from Minneapolis. You're going to have to drive down there. So I flew out and had a very interesting time there. There was a bunch of people from all over that were considered casting finalists. And while you're there, there's a whole bunch of stuff you have to do from an IQ test to like a mental health test to okay. Wardrobe to all sorts of stuff. And it was kind of like a glimpse behind the curtain of what kind of goes on like a large broadcast. But obviously it didn't work out in the way that I had hoped at that time. But I will mm-hmm. say,
as a casting finalist, you were on the show, but you weren't on the broadcast version.
Correct. Yep. And so What ended up happening was I got to meet so many other big dreamers, people that love their craft and love, you know, to either sing or write or play an instrument. These people that were immensely talented. And what you see on the show is just a sliver of the talent that was in the rooms and people I had met. And so I maintained a lot of those relationships, which was great, planning mm-hmm. national tours and, hey, I'm going to be in your city. We should, on this date, let's do a gig. And most people were always like, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. You weren't done with the TV stardom yet. You made it to American Idol, and this time you did appear on air.
Yeah, so it's actually the only reason that happened was because one of the producers from The Voice, he ended up switching companies and he reached out and he said, would you want to come down to the Minneapolis auditions? And at the time I was still kind of recovering from, I guess, the shortcoming I had, but he convinced me otherwise. And I went down and once again, it was a good experience and getting to perform in front of judges that are, you know, kind of with these world renowned artists. But once again, the silver lining for me is that as long as you believe in what you're doing and you're creating something that's from the heart and meaningful to you, that's the best you can do. And there will be people that gravitate towards your art and people will enjoy it.
Well, not only that, you did make it on air. And so that says something.
Right.
We're speaking with Preston Gunderson. He hails from Virginia, Minnesota. He's hit the national stage on those shows, and he's also done, as I said, a far more important contest to us, the Dylan Days Songwriting Contest. Tell us what that was like for you.
Yeah, well, it's actually, I performed at the Hibbing Dylan Days celebration songwriting event. So
see, Hibbing is more than just an airport.
Exactly. It's more than just an airport. So that was one of the cool things back then, too, was showcasing an original song and then also paying respects to Bob Dylan and playing one of his tunes and just kind of.
And that was a Dylan song you performed?
Yep, I did one Dylan song. It was Knocking on Heaven's Door. And then I did an original piece called Tired Eyes.
We want to showcase work from your new album, but let's hear a bit of that. This is from Tired Eyes by our guest, Preston Gunderson.
Tired eyes searching for the right. Seen too much trouble in my life. Everywhere I seem to look feels like an unwritten story to a captivating book. But I can't bring myself to terms. As the world sits, I turn. It's these tired eyes that have seen so much about love and faith, about hurt and trust. But when these tired eyes.
And that was a snippet from Tired Eyes by our guest, Preston Gunderson. It was a winning song in the Dylan contest in Dylan's hometown of Hibbing in 2014. So your new album is called Fall, conveniently debuting in the fall next week, October 22nd. What would you suggest from that?
Let's do the title track. It's called Fall.
Okay. And tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a song I wrote. Essentially, this whole album has been a catharsis for me. I was in a relationship for a long time and things just didn't work out after 6+ years. And it was a challenging thing to kind of move past when you've built a life with somebody. And ultimately, you know, as we grow as individuals, we hope for the best for people that we care about and that we love. And so I guess in many instances, making a choice to continue pursuing my dreams and making music and being on the road and doing those things kind of has made me sacrifice a lot of relationships in life and things of that nature. And so this is really just a firsthand story of kind of thinking about what happens when things just suddenly become the past. You know, one moment they're there, then they're gone.
And here's Fall by Preston Gunderson.
Fall was always your favorite season. Leaves are falling from the trees. You never cared much for football, but you watch it with me. And I remember our first day. It was over in Northeast. Of course I ran late, trying to remind myself that nothing ever really lasts, that this moment in time will soon become the past. Oh, yeah.
that was Fall, the title track from the new album by Preston Gunderson. I characterized your music in my introduction as sensitive. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's okay for a man to have feelings.
All right. Well, how about something more rocking? Do you have something of that ilk on the album?
Yeah, there's a couple different songs that are a little bit more, as you would say, rockin'. We could listen to the single is called Broken Arrow. It's a fun sounding song, and it has a moment in it towards the end, which is absolutely one of my favorite moments, not just with the writing, but the music and just kind of the expression. And it definitely rocks out at the end.
All right. Here's Broken Arrow by Preston Gunderson.
Disaster at this rate, falling slowly like autumn leaves, yet standing tall like the old oak trees. Do you feel me now like an arrow?
Thank you. And that was Broken Arrow by Preston Gunderson, our guest, late of Virginia, Minnesota, now in the Twin Cities, where he'll be premiering his new album, Thaw, from which that is one of the tracks. Where can we learn more about your music?
You can go to PrestonGunderson.com, or you can listen to me on Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere that you stream music. And if you'd like to watch any music videos, things like that, YouTube is a great resource.
All right. And Gunderson, of course, is spelt just like Marge and Norm, right?
Correct.
The whole family can enjoy that. How about one more song to take us out?
Yeah, let's do one more tune. Let's do Echoes. Let's end on a little bit of a rocker.
Okay. This is Echoes by Preston Gunderson. He hails from Virginia, Minnesota, and he's hit the national stage and back in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, where he's premiering his new album, Fall, at the Southern Theater on October 22nd. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Where are you now? Lost without the sound of your voice telling me the way. Where have you gone? I feel your presence in the room, though it's been empty so damn long. How long? That I once knew. All that are left are echoes of a love that pushed me through. And I'm gonna learn from my mistakes, holding on to your memory. I listen to your voice the best I can. Well, I hear it echo in my head.
The regional news and review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, Superior schools have a new tobacco policy, and I'm betting it won't allow me to chew tobacco in class.
That's true, yeah. Students and visitors aren't allowed to use tobacco on school property, but now they also aren't allowed to use imitation tobacco products on school grounds after the Superior School Board changed its policies this week. The policies in question discourage promotion of tobacco products and anything that would imitate tobacco, like bubblegum cigars or Big League Chew bubblegum, which is shredded and looks like chewing tobacco, are now prohibited on school grounds or any off-campus school-sponsored events. And so any student or visitor, like a student from an opposing team, would be in violation of the school's policies if they used those products on school property. The Superior School District Administrator Amy Starzecki said it can be difficult for principals to distinguish between things like beef jerky chew and the real thing because it's designed to look like chewing tobacco. And she said that allowing their use gives the appearance that tobacco use is acceptable, and they don't want to be modeling that for students. So there were some concerns raised about disciplining kids for chewing bubble gum or beef jerky that looks like tobacco. And Starzecki said their code of conduct doesn't include discipline or suspension for using imitation tobacco products. But she said students would likely be asked to just put it away if they're using them.
Well, from tobacco stains, if you will, to clean energy, there's a new report saying how well the state is doing with jobs in that sector.
Yeah, so, you know, we're coming off of the heels of the COVID-19 pandemic, and that caused some significant declines in clean energy jobs in Wisconsin. And now Wisconsin boasts more than 71,000 clean energy jobs following the economic downturn, but the state still gained back less than a third of the jobs lost in 2020. And the latest Clean Jobs Midwest report shows Wisconsin added more than 2,000 jobs last year, but that's still far below pre-pandemic levels when the state had more than 76,000 people working in the clean energy sector. And the report produced by Environmental Entrepreneurs and Evergreen Climate Solutions issued the findings based on federal employment data. The Midwest added back more than 714,000 jobs, regaining about half those lost during the economic downturn across about a dozen states. And despite setbacks, groups say billions in investment through the Inflation Reduction Act and other federal laws are set to boost jobs in the region. And they are urging states to put policies in place to leverage that funding. In Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers released a clean energy plan that estimates the state could create more than 41,000 jobs by the end of the decade. But GOP lawmakers and the Republican-controlled legislature have so far scoffed at Democratic bills to address climate change and clean energy.
All right. Well, looking at more traditional energy, Republican gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels is a part owner of a company that signed a project labor agreement with Enbridge Energy for his pipeline project, and there's some suggestion that's a problem for him, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Republican businessman Tim Michaels, who is running to unseat Governor Tony Evers, he stopped in Superior on Sunday and he was touting the Line 5 reroute project and says it needs to move forward across northern Wisconsin. And just as some background, you know, Line 5 is an oil and gas pipeline owned by Canadian firm Enbridge, and the company has proposed rerouting this pipeline around the Bad River Band's reservation because the tribe sued Enbridge in 2019 to shut down and remove that pipeline from tribal lands. As you said, Tim Michaels is a part owner, along with his brothers, of Michaels Corporation, and that owns the company that signed the project labor agreement that you referenced to build this pipeline if it's approved by regulators. And so Michael says he will divest himself from his family's business, but the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported this week that experts say that won't be easy. You know, state law does prevent public officials from taking actions that would benefit them financially. And his campaign says there will be no conflicts of interest. And his situation kind of parallels issues that come up with Donald Trump, or came up with Donald Trump, his family and businesses while he was president. Experts say, you know, some options available to Michaels could be to set up a blind trust or sell his portion of the company. But even so, if he's elected, he could appoint a new secretary to the Department of Natural Resources. And that agency oversees state environmental permits for the Line 5 project. And so he could have a great influence on environmental permitting of that project and his staff. Governor Tony Evers' campaign said they don't think Michaels is giving straight answers on how he would avoid any conflict of interest if he is elected.
Okay. Well, Rick, going to the Minnesota side, first we have to get to the Minnesota side. The Blatnik Bridge is under construction, but there's another bridge that's been out for 4 years?
Yes, Robin. Residents living in Foxboro near the Wisconsin-Minnesota border have been waiting more than 4 years for a flood-damaged county highway in their neighborhood to be repaired. And it seems they'll be waiting even longer as Douglas County officials are seeking funding through a federal hazard mitigation program to improve the bridge over the Maggie River on County Highway W. The bridge has been washed out several times in recent years because log debris gathers upstream of the bridge. And then during heavy rain, the debris turns the bridge into a dam. According to County Board Chair Mark Liebert, County Highway W is the worst road in the county. During Father's Day storm of 2018, the bridge washed out and has not been repaired since. after completing several repairs of the bridge at a cost of almost $200,000 each time since 2012, state highway officials said it didn't make sense to repair the bridge again without improving it. So four local units of government have adopted resolutions this year urging Douglas County officials to repair the bridge approaches that have been out since 2018. But again, the highway officials say that the goal has been to fix the bridge so that it won't wash out next time the area has a 4 to 6 inch rain event, a project that will likely cost about $125 million. So the county has to ask for money, has asked for one grant that it did not receive, and it has asked for another that it is still waiting for word on. If the county isn't approved for the funding at this point, it will likely repair the road to pre-flood conditions.
Well, from the bridges to the streets, winter, of course, is coming. But Duluth is looking at new technology to deal with it.
Yes, it's never too early to prepare for winter and snow in the Northland. And the city of Duluth announced this week that it plans to deploy some new technology on the roads while also holding residents to account for keeping sidewalks passable this upcoming winter. Duluth's plows are going to be equipped with GPS trackers, and software will be used to provide a real-time picture of snow clearing efforts. Jim Benning, the director of Duluth's Public Works and Utilities Department, said the technology will be used internally to help city staff monitor the progress of crews and identify any places that were perhaps missed. But in time, it could be rolled out to the public so residents can watch snow clearing efforts advance in real time. Mayor Emily Larson said city staff are also refining plow route maps to ensure maximum efficiency and a targeted, prioritized attack to keep traffic flowing. Larson's administration, if you remember, received harsh criticism for its handling of a storm that dropped more than 21 inches of snow on Duluth over the Thanksgiving weekend of 2019, prompting officials to make a number of adjustments. Last winter, two snow emergencies were declared, the first in decades. Benning said the city plans to follow the same routine this coming winter, announcing snow emergencies no later than 4 p.m. and expecting motorists to move their vehicles off snow emergency routes by 9 p.m. that evening. Now, the city will again offer free off-street parking during snow emergencies at so-called amnesty lots, including those at Wheeler Field, Leif Erickson Park, Canal Park, and the University of Minnesota Duluth.
All right. And lastly, maybe coming off of our report on making the Apostle Islands and National Lakeshore more accessible, there are also efforts in Bayfield to help the Connecticut Warbler, which doesn't just live in Connecticut.
No, it doesn't. State and county officials in Wisconsin are conducting emergency habitat work this fall in an 11th-hour effort to bring back more Connecticut warblers, the little songbird that has declined severely from the state's northern pine forests in recent years. Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and Bayfield County foresters will work this fall and next year to remove brush from stands of mature jack pines to recreate the kind of habitat the little yellow birds need to nest when they return to Wisconsin next spring. The Connecticut warbler has been declining for nearly a half century. It's down 60% nationally, nearly at a rate of 9% annually in northern Minnesota, and it's been down 80% in Wisconsin. Ryan Brady, who's a DNR conservation biologist and Minnesota's bird monitoring coordinator, said this bird is in trouble and it needs help fast. So brush removal this year and next will open the forest and encourage the growth of blueberries and other ground cover to restore the bird's preferred natural conditions. The sparrow-sized birds nest on the ground and generally feed on the ground searching for insects, but they prefer to be among tall jack pine in Wisconsin that are more than 20 feet tall. Connecticut warblers were once fairly common across the northern Wisconsin pine forest, but a 2021 survey of 60 sites where they had been found previously found only one nesting site. And a survey this spring found only three nesting pairs across their core habitat area of Bayfield and Douglas counties.
All right. Well, if you want to know, here is what the Connecticut warbler sounds like. And if you hear that, leave it alone and leave it to the experts. We've been speaking with Rick Lovers of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Preston Gunderson. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
It's the same mirror as always, as the birds welcome the light. Same headache as most days, just trying to get by. Sing along with the ignition, settle into dusty miles. These hands know where they're going, they've been at this for a while. You carry the weight.